Welcome back, everyone. A few stragglers coming back to the table here. I will kick it over to, we are up on our small mesh whiting committee report. I will turn it over to Chair Odell. When you are ready, Jackie.
I am ready. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So like other council committees, the small mesh multi-species team has been busy at work this spring. The work has been in response to the council's 2026 priority to update catch specifications for 2027 up to 2031 and management measures associated with that as well. But this work also follows through on a request made from the committee in 2025 to take a deeper dive into fishery performance, utilization, catch, and market concerns to help inform management. Joint plan development team and advisory panel workshop was held on April 1st, and a joint advisory panel and committee meeting was held on May 19th. There's a link to the materials for today's discussion that I hope council members have the opportunity to review. There have been some great analyses as it relates to markets, catch of whiting and red hake by the directed and other fisheries, a review of the history and purpose of the exemption areas, along with preliminary exemption area analysis to assist the committee in their recommendation being offered to the council today. So today, the action by the council is to approve the scope of measures to be considered in the 2026 management action and initiate a framework adjustment action if necessary, which we will get into in the discussion. And with that, I will pass it off to Mr. Applegate.
Thank you very much. Good morning, council members. I'm kind of new here, so if you're not familiar with me, I'm Andy Applegate. I'm a senior analyst with the council and leading the whiting team. To my right is my colleague, Mark Grant, who's worked with me on small mesh. Emily Bodell and staff has also worked on the small mesh team. So, As the committee chair pointed out, I'm going to bounce back and forth here with my notes. Today we're going to be presenting an update of the work done this spring, and it leads us to a scope of alternatives to be considered. And dependent upon which types of action that the council approves today, we will either prepare a specifications document or a framework adjustment, following the same timeline either way. If necessary, the council will be asked to initiate a framework adjustment, and the first framework meeting would be September, final action in December, the same timeline that we would follow with specs without an initial meeting in September. Today we're going to be covering a number of issues, including the process, keep people familiar with that for developing this management action. Mr. Grant reviewed a lot of the background between the exemption areas and multi-species management background and the bycatch allowances, so he'll be presenting that today. We're going to talk briefly about the assessment data updates and risk policy and how they mesh or plan for them to mesh. We had the advisory panel comments on fishery performance earlier this spring. We'll cover that. There is analysis on red hake possession limits using the observer data. I'll give a high-level review of the extensive work that was presented to the committee. Same thing for exemption area boundaries and seasons. And then we'll finish up with proposed scope of action. So this is a high-level outline of our timeline. It's it's really been the same since early spring. There's a more detailed version available, but where we're at is in the first row under April to June, council initiate action if needed. Going forward, we're going to be developing specifications, doing the risk policy scoring, and preparing our recommendations for the SSC, as well as preparing a document and analyzing the effects for specifications and other management measures as necessary. So this morning you did the weighting exercise, and so the next step is where the real work gets done, no pun intended, but we have scheduled a PDT meeting on July 29th to conduct risk factor scoring and prepare a recommendation based upon that risk for the SSC meeting in October. This graphic really focuses on risk policy alone. Somewhere in August and early September, there is work to be done by the PDT getting the assessment results and applying the risk factor scoring to the assessment results. We are currently polling for a committee meeting in late August, early September, to get an update from the PDT, as well as to get input from the AP members about their assessment of commercial fishery risk, one of the components of the risk factor scoring. As I pointed out, primary focus of this action is to update specifications. We're in the third year of a current three-year cycle. The whiting, northern silver hake, southern silver hake, and offshore hake in the south was conducted with an empirical assessment. Catch at a fishing mortality associated with a P-star of 25%. Northern red hake, as well as southern red hake, were the assessment was conducted as an ad hoc catch specifications based on trends. This is very compatible with our new data update process. And with southern red hake, it's currently in a rebuilding program, so we set the catch to be 75% of the catch specifications to promote rebuilding. Going forward, we're looking forward to preparing specifications for 2027 up through 2031, a five-year period, using the assessment data update, catch and survey biomass, abundance, age, and size, using an ad hoc approach based on trends. And I said scientific uncertainty not estimated here, but in talking with Dr. Alati from the center, it appears that given the information we have available, we should be able to estimate scientific uncertainty using the same methods that we had done before, estimating the P-star 25%. The secondary focus is on management measures, summarize those as possession limits, particularly red hake possession limits. The preliminary analysis was done on that. Exemption area boundaries and seasons, bycatch limit consistency, and how we use letter of authorizations for the raised foot rope trawl area and the cultivator shoal area, and whether they're still useful and or necessary. Before I go through some of the analysis and go further, Mark Grant did an excellent review for the committee of the management history and current management. And so I'm going to turn the mic over to him to give you a high-level overview to keep you informed of how we manage the small mesh fishery. Mark?
Thanks, Andy. Good morning, everybody. Also want to give a lot of credit to Emily Bodell, who worked on this exemption area history with me. I successfully dodged this portion of the multi-species FMP for 20 years, but it did eventually catch up to me. So here you can see that there was an iterative approach to creating exemptions that allow the use of small mesh. And this is handled this way because in the original Northeast Multi-Species Fishery Management Plan in 1985, the use of small mesh, anything less than 5.5 inches, was prohibited. But at the same time, the FMP established an exemption program through which the regional administrator could exempt a fishery from the minimum mesh size if bycatch of groundfish species was less than 5% of total catch. And several exemption programs have been approved for the whiting fishery in this iterative process. And these are just the creation dates of the current exemption areas. So this image shows those exemption areas, some of the statistical areas, and some of the other relevant management areas, just to give you a visual orientation to what we're talking about. One thing I do like to highlight here is you'll see a blue wavy triangle, and that's the closed area one north seasonal closure area. And I highlight that one because it cuts into and changes the shape of the cultivated shoal area, which is in green there. So I'm not going to go through all the details of this slide, but I did want you to have it in your packet as background. And the key here is highlighting that the requirements of the various exemption areas differ in some ways quite substantially. And that's season, minimum mesh size, the bycatch species that may be possessed, and whether or not the vessel must carry a letter of authorization. You'll see I highlighted two in yellow, cultivated shoal and the raised foot rope trawl areas. That's because those are the ones that require a letter of authorization. So there were some prior AP and committee discussions about the exemption areas. Back in November of 2023, there was some discussion around changing exemption area seasons and boundaries. That ended up with a recommendation to the council, but that ultimately was not included in the IRA project proposal. And then in November of 2025, there was a suggestion to re-examine small mesh area 2 and the cultivator shoals area in terms of aligning with the new habitat and groundfish management areas and adjusting the dates that it's open. So I'm going to just quickly talk to you a bit about the letters of authorization. So there's three uses for the LOAs. Enforcement. During enforcement operations, during a boarding at sea, they'll request the LOA and they will use that to determine compliance with the regulations. It's a handy cheat sheet for both the vessel and for the enforcement officers. In management, looking back at the history, one of the initial objectives of having these letters of authorization was to allow NIMS to identify the vessels participating in the fishery in an attempt to simplify monitoring. And there are also some data analysis applications of being able to look back at which vessels got the LOAs. And in our discussion with the AP, they also mentioned that when necessary, since they're required to have the LOA on board, it's a handy reference for them as well as presenting it to enforcement agents when they're boarded. And just a reminder, it's the cultivator shoal and the raised foot rope trawl areas that require LOAs. So we'll talk a little bit about bycatch allowances on these small mesh trips. So, as I said earlier, small mesh was prohibited by the initial groundfish FMP back in 1985 to prevent bycatch of regulated species, and it created the exemption program so the RA can create exempted fisheries, allowing them to use a smaller minimum mesh size if groundfish bycatch was less than 5%. Several whiting fishery exemptions have been approved in the Gulf of Maine, in southern New England, and the Mid-Atlantic. And then the allowed bycatch species and limits vary between the programs. The Gulf of Maine great raised foot rope is the most restrictive. The Southern New England exemption area allows possession of the most species, and the Mid-Atlantic exemption area doesn't really have specific bycatch limits for the small mesh fishery. This is just illustrating the differences between the exemption areas when it comes to permissible bycatch species. I'm not going to run through them all for you, but I want you to see there's sort of a standard list here, and it's not applicable to each of the groups. And then in addition to these, in southern New England, we have this broader suite of species that are also allowed while fishing in the southern New England exemption area. So a bit more on the bycatch limits. The cultivator shoal exemption area was created by Amendment 4, and that had a 1% bycatch limit of regulated species, and that was based on experimental fishery data at the time. That was revised several times through Amendment 5, Frameworks 3, 6, 9. Small mesh areas 1 and 2 were created by the Framework 9 exemption supplement, and kudos again to Emily for ferreting out that obscure document. And then the raised foot rope trawl was created much later, Framework 35, and unlike the earlier ones, it also prohibited possession of bottom-dwelling species such as lobster and monkfish, specifically to discourage vessels from rigging their gear improperly, and this was also applied to small mesh areas 1 and 2. And then Framework 37 limited all the Gulf of Maine raised foot rope trawl areas to possession of just red hake, squid, butterfish, mackerel, dogfish, herring, and scup. The Gulf of Maine Great Raised Foot Rope was created by Framework 38, initially had the incidental catch set the same as for the Cape Cod Bay Raised Foot Rope Trawl, with one exception, which was prohibiting the possession of dogfish. And Framework 38 prohibited possession of monkfish, lobsters, and skates to ensure, again, that the net is rigged correctly, keeping the foot rope off the bottom, and basically should be less likely to encounter those species. And then crabs, longhorn, sculpin, sea raven, and dogfish were prohibited to reduce damage to whiting because they're soft-bodied fish, as well as to encourage, again, fishing the net properly with the rope up off the bottom. And so with that, I'm going to turn things back over to Andy.
Thank you, Mark. So turn back to the types of management measures that were under consideration. Including the specifications, red hake possession limits, exemption areas, adjustments. So in terms of data updates, why are we doing them? Because we, instead of an assessment, we're adapting to the capacity constraints that currently exist across the region. We have had some experience with it, but it's still being developed. The idea is to have faster incorporation of the new data from the survey and the catch into our process, and to update those key inputs without rebuilding a full model. Now it's more applicable to a stock that has an analytical model, but even empirical and statistical-based models, that still applies. And so the intent is to refresh the advice for setting catch using the new updated surveys and catch information. The deadline that has been selected for this year is August 3rd. You'll note that that's after our July 29th PDT meeting. We may get the data for the 29th meeting, and then we'll use that during risk factor scoring, but we will have a follow-up meeting in August to fully develop the specifications under the PDT's umbrella. And if the data is not available till August 3rd, that's still okay. That will work fine. So we're going to be applying the risk factor scoring, as was illustrated late yesterday and early today, using tiers. And so the PDT is going to be focusing on interpretation of tiers and what do they mean. We currently use P-star of 25%, which is a pretty conservative value for whiting and silver hake. And the council selected that for a number of risk adverse reasons, including the species' central role in the ecosystem, its importance to the fishery, the vulnerability or potential resilience should the fishery become overfished. There were a number of factors that were already considered. With red hake, those factors were not as critical or crucial, and so the council selected a P-star 40% for red hake, which in the last specification cycle we did not actually use because we could not estimate scientific uncertainty with a type of trend analysis that had been done and approved by the SSC. So I'm not sure how things are going to turn out. We haven't done the risk factor scoring. I'm not sure where the points are going to fall on that graph on the right. But I anticipate that for some stocks, many stocks are going to fall somewhere in the yellow zone. Maybe for northern silver hake, it may fall into the green zone, which will... But I think that the P-star values that the council selected are going to try and make the argument that they are consistent with the P-star values that are already in the plan, because to change them in the plan at this juncture is likely to require at least a framework adjustment and considerable analysis if it differs. So that's something that the council should, looking forward beyond this action, may want to look at in terms of changing the P-star values that currently uses in association with the Z-score risk tolerance. I'm going to skip this one because I basically covered it, and you covered it this morning. So, the advisory panel report, we got input from the advisory panel. Emily did a great job in summarizing their comments. They highlighted the concerns and risk associated with offshore wind development, because particularly in the southern New England, whiting fisheries are significant overlap with the lease areas and where they're actively being built out, which can inhibit where fishing can occur. Small mesh is one of the fisheries prior analysis is in the State of the Ecosystem report, where it's highlighted that offshore wind development is impactful on the small mesh fishery. There's a number of effects on price, particularly imports. Dr. Pradhan on our PDT and our staff presented a pretty extensive analysis of pricing of whiting and the effect of imports on whiting prices. And we also noted over the past few years that the whiting price has declined considerably through fishing year 2025. And so that was a concern of fishermen, that's an important consideration in terms of stress on the fishery. It generated some interest in changing the possession limits as a way of mitigating those changes due to imports and lower prices. They talked about whiting availability, seeing more whiting in some southern New England areas, fish arriving earlier in the season, leaving later, changes in seasonality of the resource as opposed to fixed restrictions on when exemption areas are open, and the timing's been particularly different in the Gulf of Maine due to changes in water temperatures. There's also impacts from other fisheries. When the scup fishery closes early, it can affect when fishermen are trying to fish for whiting or would like to fish for whiting. Some vessels switch to small mesh fishing. It has some impacts on price. There's also an effect on whiting quality when there's significant scape bycatch, and that's another issue that the advisors highlighted. So in terms of future considerations, the advisors keep an eye on offshore wind development and various programs associated with it, including aquaculture, marine carbon dioxide removal, etc. Climate change affecting shifting distributions and other fisheries, which can either drive participation into the small mesh fishery or remove some effort from the fishery. That's occurred in some way in the last few years when squid have been more abundant and more valuable. So I'm going to turn to some analyses that we did as an evaluation or investigation into some of these aspects. They are preliminary. We would do some additional analysis associated with any alternatives that develop from them. So first up are Red Hake trip limits, which the advisors highlighted. Most of the discards occur in July through November. Historically, we looked at the period 1994-2001, as well as a more recent period, 2022-2025. Sorry, can I go back? Yes. And we looked at the catch per trip. And if you look at it in terms of the number of trips that land, that catch red hake, and how much they catch per trip, the vast majority of trips catch less than 200 pounds. And that's shown in this graph. The left column is 2018 to 2021, an earlier period, compared to a later period, 2022 to 2025. Each row represents a quarter. First row is quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four, and they're calendar quarters. You note that the landings are indicated in blue. The discards are indicated in beige or yellow or whatever color you want to call that. And no matter how much is actually caught, there's a significant amount of discards in the fishery. And largely that's driven by lack of market, price insufficient to justify the processing costs, which are billed to the vessel. And so they end up discarding quite a bit of red hake. Also, on longer trips, the quality suffers. On the other hand, if you look at this in terms of catch, those small number of trips, which are barely perceptible in the earlier graph, there's a few trips that land that catch a high volume of red hake. And that's especially so in quarter two in the latter period, it has a very high proportion of discarded fish, higher than usual. Let me see. So that occurs when we look at by target species in the whiting fishery, in using 2 and 4 seam trawls, it occurs in areas 525 and 537. And these are pretty isolated in quarter two. And in quarter two, we looked at the observed trips. The observed trips also have an indicator of why the discarding occurred. In most cases, discarding is occurring due to lack of market. In these specific areas, in that quarter, is a considerable amount of catch reported as discarded due to regulations. There was also discussion by the advisors about the TAL trigger. And what happens is we set a TAL limit, and when landings reach a certain percent of that TAL, it causes a reduction in the possession limit down to 400 pounds, which was considered to be an incidental limit. That change is discretionary on the part of the regional administrator, dependent upon whether they anticipate that the annual catch limit is likely to be exceeded by the end of the year. There have been times in recent periods where the landings reached the TAL trigger, but it didn't cause a reduction in the possession limit, because at a TAL trigger of 41% of the TAL, it was unlikely for the catch to exceed the annual catch limit. So we did have some overages in 2018 to 2020, which caused a reduction in the TAL trigger from 90% to 41% by council and regulatory action. Since that time, there have been no ACL overages. Let me catch up with my notes. So in conclusion, our lessons learned, few of any observed trips have red hake catches exceeding the possession limit. A high proportion of red hake catches are discarded regardless of how much is caught. The intent of the lower possession limit, and there's a split limit there of 600 pounds for small mesh and 1,000 pounds for selective gears or large mesh, it was meant to cause fishermen to try to avoid catching red hake. Obviously, that's not working in specific areas and times. I covered the TAL trigger effect, and so it didn't seem appropriate for that specific area to increase the possession limit. However, the red hake status in the northern area is in pretty good condition. We originally had a 5,000 pound possession limit. It's currently 3,000 pounds, so it might be justified to raise that limit to 5,000 pounds. Although there aren't very many trips that exceed even the 3,000 pounds. So next, turning to exemptionary fishing analysis. I know this is a lot of material, but we're covering at a high level. The AP discussion was to focus analysis on expanding existing exemption areas rather than creating new areas, align those areas with the existing management areas. There have been changes to the groundfish areas that were not reflected in changes into adjoining exemption areas. And there's an interest in changing the cultivator shoal area to reflect that change in the groundfish regulations. And the advisors recognize the change in the small mesh area 1, which is an inshore Gulf of Maine, inshore of the western Gulf of Maine closed area, would be challenging due to the presence of lobster, gear, hard bottom, and groundfish species. So we conducted analysis using observed data, and we did that because the survey data is synoptic, conducted in the spring and the fall, so it doesn't provide the seasonal contrast that we need to evaluate the fishery. We could also not use the CAMS data because it wasn't sufficiently granular from a geographic basis and didn't provide, we did do an initial analysis and it didn't provide meaningful results. But we were able to conduct analysis using large mesh trips to look at the ratio between small mesh multi-species and large mesh groundfish. And we recognize that there's a selectivity difference between the two fisheries, obviously. And if you average it over the Gulf of Maine, the average small mesh catch to groundfish catch ratio is about 3.5%. So we were looking for areas that exceeded that 3.5% as an indicator of where we might conduct a small mesh fishery. Questions about what threshold do we use in the as an indicator? Is there a minimum number of observed hauls and trips? And is there consistency? Is there a large variation? Is it being driven by just a couple of hauls or trips, or whether it's consistent? We did analyze the data, which included 56,000 observed hauls from 2021 to 2025. So this chart does not show the data, but what it does is color-coded to represent the various areas that were analyzed. And it's hard to for me to, I do have a pointer, but does it work? Does it work? No, it does not work. There you go. Yeah, okay. You can't see it in the screen. Can't see it in the screen. Okay. So starting from the north and working south, small mesh area two is offshore of the Western Gulf of Maine area, which is shown in a rose color. There's an area in between those two, which is not closed to groundfish. It's not open to small mesh. There's three 10-minute squares in there with a significant number of large mesh trips, which are fishing next to the boundary of the Western Gulf of Maine area, by the way, which we could analyze. Moving further south, the raised foot rope trawl area is off the Cape, and there was an area to the north of that which is shown in a pink color, which indicated that the catches were elevated in the large mesh fishery, small mesh catches. We did analyze that and present it. Moving further to the south, there are two overlapping areas to the southwest of the cultivator shoal areas that indicated that the large mesh, the catch of small mesh species in the large mesh fishery were elevated. And then there was an area to the northeast of cultivator shoals area that was also indicated a high small mesh to groundfish catch ratio. The discussion at the committee was to focus on the sliver between the small mesh area 2 and the Golden, and the Western Gulf of Maine area, as well as the two areas to the southwest of the cultivator shoal area. And we looked at the seasonality of all of the areas, and there is a recommendation to extend the season for the raised foot rope trawl area off the Cape. So So why would we do this? There's an indicator that they could be beneficial to the small mesh fishery. The boundaries of the ground fish areas change. It would provide greater flexibility to the industry to target whiting when they appear, reducing fishing costs and expanding the opportunity to fish when they when it's useful to respond to market pricing. We also looked into the monkfish and lobster possession limits in certain areas that they're lower than the general bycatch limit in the individual plans. And so there is a recommendation from the committee to look at those as management measures to change to make them more consistent, but not necessarily change the ones that prohibit the retention of monkfish and lobster in the raised foot rope trawl area. And that's true of the Gulf of Maine gray area as well, right? Okay. All right. So the committee is proposing the suite of measures, not changing the letter of authorization requirements. There was support from the advisors for keeping them as is for the reasons that were outlined earlier. If you accept the committee's recommendations, the measures that would fall into these categories shown in red, some of them, the changes to exemption areas or changing the PSTAR values would require a framework adjustment. I want to point out that the timeline would be the same, and the framework adjustment does not necessarily mean that the council has to upgrade the analysis to an environmental assessment. We could still do a SIR to analyze the potential effects. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chair O'Dell to make the committee motion. Or we could take questions beforehand.
Thank you for that,
Andy and Mark. So I will open up the questions, comments on the presentation.
Okay, that was a formality. Oh, sorry, Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you for your presentation. I mean, this is a timing issue. Slide three talked about the risk policy, and as we decided today, and it was pointed out, these species do not have an ACL recreationally, but there is recreational catch, and I just point that out and note that I think you would agree that there was contribution of comments from the recreational community, including myself, which added to the changes in the spatial distribution and extent of where these fish have been found over time. But I just note that as that's a disconnect with what we pointed out earlier. But there was comment associated with the recreational fishery and impacts. And it is a small portion of the catch, but there is catch and it's being reported. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. The fishery performance report that I presented in December includes estimates of recreational catch in it. It is important to the fishery from a number of perspectives, particularly for the tuna fishery as a source of forage for important recreational fish. So we do recognize that and would recognize that in the impacts analysis.
Mr. Pentney.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Andy. Can you go back to slide 47? I just had a quick question on that graph. Or maybe it was that one, 48. So as you explained, this is showing that the vast majority of trips are catching less than 200 pounds, right? And it looks like about half of which is being discarded and half of which is being kept. And I'm wondering, are those the same trips, or are there some trips that are keeping all of the, you know, small amounts of red hake that they're catching, and some trips are discarding all of the red hake? Or are they? Is it a mix of they're keeping some limited amount and discarding some limited amount? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I didn't look at it from that perspective, so I can't really say. We can provide that information from the data that we have.
Mr. Alexander and then Ms. Ware.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. The chart with all the slide with the charts, it's, I had three or four now. Go ahead, like 53, 54. It's the one with the chart with all the areas on it. Damn, I was way off, 64, okay. Anyway, so are you suggesting that we might be able to add that sliver that's right along the Western Gulf of Maine area to the raised rope area, or an exempted area?
Yeah, the alternative, should the council choose to move ahead with that kind of measure, would change the small mesh area to boundary to be consistent with the eastern edge of the Western Gulf of Maine area.
And that old line is before the habitat, omnibus habitat?
Correct.
Amen. So it's 55 then. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Ware?
Thanks. I just want to quickly clarify for the incidental lobster catch consistency. That discussion was just focused on, I guess it would be Cultivator Shore in southern New England as opposed to other exemption areas.
I think it would also include the small mesh areas 1 and 2 in Ipswich Bay and offshore Western Gulf of Maine area.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll just flag for folks that Maine statute does not allow the retention of lobster by drag, trawl, net, seine, et cetera, et cetera. We can get you that language, but I think that shouldn't apply to most of those. Thank you.
Further questions on the presentation? Seeing none, I believe we have a committee motion. I will turn to Chair O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I have this motion from the committee from our meeting for your review right now, and I will read it into the record. That I move on behalf of the committee that the 2026 small mesh whiting action include measures that would, one, set specifications for up to 5 years, 2027 to 2031. Number two, consider application of risk policy in the catch setting process. Number three, consider a modification to the red hake possession limit and AM trigger. And number four, make various adjustments to exemption areas, boundary seasons, and consistency with catch thresholds based upon analysis of the large mesh fishery catch ratios and other data. Measures to be considered for specifications that are adjusted for risk factors that the council has identified, adjusting the northern hake possession limit from 3,000 to 5,000 pounds due to improved resource conditions, adjusting the southern red hake possession limit 600 to 1,000, adjusting the monkfish and lobster allowances for exemption area trips to be consistent with existing limits in other fisheries, consideration of exemption areas expansion to the southwest of the Cultivator Shoal area and west of Small Mesh Area 2, and an extension of the raised foot rope season to include January and February.
Thank you that for Ms. O'Dell. So that is a committee motion, does not need a second.
I will open it up for discussion and comments and questions on the motion, but I just want to point out, as we've been going for the past couple of days on a number of other actions, that we've kind of simplified, and I'm not saying the committee should or the council should or shouldn't do, but maybe it's an opening for discussion to take that approach if people feel that is necessary. And I'll go back to you, Ms. O'Dell.
Okay. As a general note, the small mesh, and I think this is an important difference between other FMPs, is that we don't have the, there are rollover specifications that are in place. So there isn't this deadline like we have for the other fisheries that we have discussed this week. That's number one. I just wanted to create for rationale. Number two, in Mark Grant's proposal or in his presentation, he made note that, looking at the exemption areas for resource distribution, catch, and, increasing utilization in the fishery has been something that has been discussed and recommended since IRA projects since 2023. So I just want to make note of that as well. So based on the analyses that we've received, and in acknowledging since the time that we've met, we've learned that there may be a greater effort to consider exemption areas across many fisheries. However, this is our recognizing that will take time, and recognizing this has been a few years now since some of these areas have been identified and considered for the small mesh fishery. This is our motion with slight modifications to be able to make improvements to the fishery starting hopefully in 2027. Thank you.
Thank you for that. With that, I will open up to the rest of the council with comments. Ms. Griffin, did you have your hand?
No, I'm going to.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Alexander.
So are those, question for Jackie, are those rollover things adequate to, so the fishery can function?
I'm
normally?
Going to phone a friend.
Okay.
Mr. Applegate.
Yes, the fishery is, except for southern red hake, is underutilized. The take of whiting has been about 20 to 25% of the quota. We have had specifications, not the last cycle, but the one before, which didn't go into place until September, as we had some issues to resolve working with Garfo. And so it didn't cause a problem for the fishery, is what I'm getting around to saying. So I think we have adequate buffer to the fishery's not in a crisis. So we could, even if it didn't go into place by May 1, it wouldn't cause much of effect at all for the fishery.
Okay, and a follow-up on that, maybe you can answer this too, Andy. How would that affect the work that we're doing in the groundfish plan to modify that area down that we voted for the other day, to modify that area in the southern area? The accountability measure that we have in place, would that affect that at all? Or yes or no?
So that's, you mean the habitat research area?
No, the accountability measure for southern red hake off New York, off of Long Island, south of Long Island?
I don't think they're related.
Yeah, I think you're talking the southern window pane. Is that
window pane. I was thinking southern red hake. Thank you. Sorry.
Dr. O'Keefe?
Thank you. I will note, though, that these are exemptions in the multi-species plan, and so there is an overlap here with needing to coordinate with groundfish, and I'll just make the note now that when the council discussed the idea of the spiny dogfish exemption area that was included in the council's response to Executive Order 14276, We said that we did not want to start that work in 2026 because we wanted to look at these exemption areas kind of more holistically, not one by one. So I just kind of want to remind the council that we made that decision specific to spiny dogfish, and that you might want to remember that as you talk about these ones as well. Thanks.
Ms. Griffin?
Yeah, Dr. O'Keefe kind of preempted me a little bit there. I was going to ask you, Jackie, also if, so you said slight modifications to the exemption areas based on the catch ratios. Was there any other discussion beyond that about any other review larger to the exemption areas?
Well, we also looked at catch in general that was available to us, and it seemed that, you know, some of those areas, I mean, you know, aside from, you know, the habitat omnibus changed the areas, you know, before, is it small mesh area two in Cultivator Shoal? You'll look, you know, if you look, you can see where, how they were designed based on the old closed areas that were changed in OHA two, but there was no additional modification that was made to small mesh exemption areas based on those changes. And we discussed that, and we also discussed looking at catch information and looking at kind of the seasonality and distribution of when and where fish have been seemed to make sense with the fishery of where it is today. So that's why we narrowed in on that, those small changes. Recognizing that, you know, we felt like those small changes would help the utilization in the fishery, were the most reasonable to offer at this stage, and any further full-blown exemption review would require additional work moving forward.
So just to comment, I think I understand trying to move more quickly with the smaller modifications. I think I am inclined to, given the very real fact that all these examples, tiny dogfish and these do live in the groundfish, it makes sense to me to kind of consider them holistically, you know, that we could prioritize that for 2027. So to me, it makes a little more sense to carve that out, not saying that we wouldn't do it for 2027, but maybe in a different vehicle. That's where I am.
Yeah, I mean, to put it straight, this will require the groundfish committee to actually initiate the act, have part of the action as well. So this is not strictly from the whiting committee. Further questions, comments on the motion on the board? Mr. Pappalardo.
Yeah, I mean, there's been several comments hinting at this isn't as simple as it seems. And what's the back office implications? And is this a change in priorities?
Dr. O'Keefe?
Well, if you wanted to do this year, I think you would have needed to include it in the scope for Framework 74 yesterday, and we didn't. And I don't necessarily, maybe a change in priorities is a bit too far. When we talked about whiting, we said that we would talk about other measures, but we did specifically defer on a 2026 priority for the spiny dogfish exemption area with the rationale that we wanted to look at these more holistically. When we set priorities in December, we didn't specifically talk about small mesh exemption areas. That has come up, you know, through the development of the scope of this action. But ultimately, this would have to be a measure to the Northeast Multispecies FMP. It's not included in the scope for Framework 74. I don't think the council wants to revisit that now with the whole discussion about clean specs. That would definitely not be a clean spec package if we added this to that action. So it could be a priority that you think about for inclusion in 2027 or beyond.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
The way it's written now, it's like we're going to move forward with all of this. I think what hasn't been said is somebody might want to make a motion to split and do a clean spec and carry the bottom half of the motion
forward to priority discussion. I mean, I hear the leadership of the council hinting that that is something the council should discuss and consider, especially since it missed the train on 74, and even if it was in 74, it likely wouldn't. 74 would have been imperiled by it as well. So I see a lot of caution flags waving at the top of the table.
I'll turn to Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. I do think you want to really think about this motion before you vote on it. I don't think you need to do just clean specs for small mesh, though. As the committee chair pointed out, and Mr. Applegate, we do have rollover provisions. So specifications is number one in this committee motion for 5 years. But numbers two and three could be considered in this action, you know, adjustments to possession limits or AM triggers. That's something that we could include in this action, and you know, implementation beyond May 1st for small mesh is less dire. I think that was Mr. Alexander's question, because we have rollover provisions. It's really number four, making adjustments to the exemption areas, that I think if you try to include that work in 2026, would have to reopen the groundfish discussion or initiate a separate groundfish action. So it's not that we can only do specs for whiting. It is a little bit of a different situation. We can do a little bit more if that's the council's purview.
So follow up. So to the executive director, the fourth item in this motion is the one that engages the groundfish FMP. And that's the one that creates some queasiness. That's the one where we should consider moving to a priority consideration in 20 for next year. Okay. I'll see what other people have to say.
Ms. O'Dell?
I just want to say that we've had a lot of discussion over the last few years as a committee, getting a lot of great input from our advisors and great analysis by staff to lead to this motion of recommendation to improve the operations and performance of the fishery. And I understand that there's I guess I didn't realize the subsequent action that would need to be taken with groundfish until today. But I just have concerns that this has been something that's been discussed and worked on, and I have concerns that there would be, I understand the complexity, but I on behalf of everyone that's worked on this, I would have concerns that this would be a delay for the fishery, not trying to make things complicated to the groundfish plan, but I just have concerns that we're at where we're at today.
Go to Dr. O'Keefe first.
Thank you. I do appreciate that, and I don't think the intent is to continue to delay measures, but we did have this discussion as a full council in December around the idea of the dogfish exemption areas, and it was identified at that point that these exemption areas are included in the groundfish plan. So this would have to be included as a groundfish priority, and you know, through a lot of discussion on staff, we've thought about the idea of looking at these exemption areas more holistically, because you know, making a small change in one, if you look at them across the board, you might actually be able to make more substantial changes in a timeline that within the next maybe 2 years, rather than one small tweak for whiting this year, another small tweak for dogfish 2 years from now. I actually think by bundling them and looking at this kind of more holistically, we speed up the timeline to make overarching change to the exemption areas and not just kind of one piece at a time.
Mr. Platts.
Yeah, I hate to hold industry up because it imposes costs on industry, but I agree with John's suggestion and what the executive director just said. I think we need to deal with that issue. We postponed it last year. The dogfish EFP that Massachusetts put together, and most people seem to be supportive of, that won't work for the majority of vessels that would participate in that outside of an EFP because they don't have groundfish days, and it's during the close time that we had discussed last year. So I think the pressure is mounting to deal with all these issues at once, and so it's incumbent on us as a council to now move this forward and move with the ball to minimize the cost to industry. But I think dealing with it holistically is a good approach, and we just need to prioritize it and get moving on it this December.
Thank you for that. Turn to Ms. Griffin.
I think it's pretty clear we have a potential alternative. I think I will offer up an amendment just so we can have a clear deliberation on that. I'll talk slowly. It'll be simple. I didn't send it.
Yep. When you're ready.
Yeah. I'd move to amend that 2026 action. It's going to take the wording from the other one. The 2026 action include the 1 through 3 items. And that 4 is a recommendation for the council's consideration during 2027 prioritization. I don't want to just be silent on that. Sorry, motion to substitute. No, it's okay. If you're changing it. Yeah, so none of the substantive language is changing. It's just changing the timing of when we would take up the exemption discussion here. So none of the, yeah, I think you've got it.
Okay, folks, if we can kind of come back, I think we have this all straightened out, please, if we can. Hopefully we can get a couple folks back to the table. Thank you for this. I believe we have this straightened out with the language on the board, and we will have Ms. Griffin, her motion to amend, up on the table. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you to General Counsel and to staff for bearing with me for a minute here. I would move to amend that the 2026 small mesh whiting action include measures that would, one, set specifications for up to 5 years, 2027 to 2031, 2, consider application of risk policy and catch setting process. 3, consider a modification to red hake possession limit and AM trigger. Measures to be considered are specifications that are adjusted for risk factors that the council has identified, adjusting the northern red hake possession limit from 3,000 to 5,000 pounds due to improved resource conditions, adjusting the southern red hake possession limit 600 to 1,000 pounds, adjusting the monkfish and lobster allowances for exemption area trips to be consistent with existing limits in other fisheries. A recommendation for consideration during priorities discussion is to make various adjustments to exemption areas, boundaries, seasons, and consistency with bycatch thresholds based upon analysis of large mesh fishery catch ratios and other data. Example is consideration of exemption area expansion to the southwest of the Cultivator Shoals area and to the west of Small Mesh Area 2, and an extension of the raised foot rope season to include January and February.
Thank you for that. That we'll need a second, looking around the table for a second. Mr. Platts.
Thank you. Yeah, so again, the intent of this is that we this year move forward with a specification action that can include some management measures, including the AM trigger, but that we would move any discussion of the exemption areas into a possible 2027 priority that would be a little bit more holistic to involve the groundfish staff that is needed to be involved and our other already identified priority with the dogfish, or sorry, not priority, but intent to do something with dogfish exemption area.
Thank you for that. Anything additional, Mr. Platts?
No, I think that covered it.
Thank you. To the motion to amend on the board, comments, questions?
Ms. Odell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I just want to note that the recommendation that was put forth in number four before it got moved to a recommendation here on consideration of exemption area expansion to the southwest of Cultivator Shoal and the west of Small Mesh Area 2, an extension of the raised foot rope season to include January and February was, and when the committee and the AP met, we had a lot of information that we were reviewing, and those were three that we selected as being what we believe to be based on data and minor changes. So I just want to note that if there's a larger omnibus action that's going to take place or a larger groundfish action, that we those were recommendations based on our intent to have small modifications. But if we're going to be having an action, I wouldn't want to limit us to those, that those are examples, but we don't, there was a lot that we discussed at our last meeting. We could have made a lot of recommendations, but we thought that those were the three strongest. But if we're going to have a discussion of the exemption areas, I would hope that we could have a more thorough discussion on that and potentially even consider other data sets, not just the creative work that Mr. Applegate did in looking at the ASM for large mesh trips. So just want to make note of that.
Thank you, Ms. Odell. Further comments from the council? Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a little bit of heartburn with the last part of this, the last sentence in the first section of this motion, which is adjusting the monkfish and lobster allowance. Looking back where it says Framework 38 prohibited the possession of monkfish and lobsters and skates to ensure that the net is rigged correctly, such as the foot rope is not in contact with the bottom and much less likely to catch these species. Why is that concern been alleviated? Because that's still a concern, and I'm not sure how difficult it is to adjust the foot rope so the net is in contact with the bottom, but monkfish and lobster are a lot more valuable species, so there'd be almost an incentive to rig the net incorrectly if they have some kind of retention. I'm sorry if I missed that in the presentation, but you know, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Applegate.
Just a point of clarification on that. The intent, should it go forward, is to adjust the existing monkfish and lobster allowances in those areas where they exist, not replace a new allowance or limit on landings of those areas where they are currently prohibited due to the aforementioned reasons. In other words, the areas with the raised foot rope trawl where monkfish and lobsters are prohibited would remain prohibited, but other areas we would change the possession limits to be consistent with the bycatch limits in those plans.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Ware.
Thanks. I guess following on that topic, I'm now confused on what we are applying the lobster and monkfish increases to, because my understanding based on the table, it's only Cultivator Shore in Southern New England that currently allow lobster bycatch. And I believe it was mentioned earlier that Small Mesh Area 1 and 2 could also be considered for retention of lobster bycatch. So I do think this is more than just increasing trip limits in areas that currently allow lobster bycatch. This is allowing lobster bycatch in additional new areas.
I will come to you, sir. Andy, do you have an answer? I think the answer was given, but
yeah. So slide 19 shows where monkfish and lobster is, I'm sorry, 23 is permitted. So this would apply to cultivator shoals in southern New England areas only.
Okay. I am comfortable to move forward if that is the case, but that was it. That's a different answer than what we received previous.
Ms. O'Dell?
I would just go back to the table that was in Andy's presentation that shows, you know, it's specific to exemption areas. It's not a full consideration of other areas that have more restrictive measures or that have raised foot rope trawl gear requirements.
I think to alleviate this concern that we're hearing, is it possible someone wants to throw a friendly in there to make this a little more clear to everyone around the table and those in the room? And online, what the specific areas are in the motion. If we could bring the motion to amend back up, is it possible to throw the actual areas that we are considering this part in? Ms. Ware?
I'm happy to offer that as a friendly to Ms. Griffin and Mr. Potts. I think it would be, sorry, I'm flipping back before the table, Cultivator Shore and Southern New England that currently allow lobster, and it would be adjusting those.
And just to confirm from the chair that that's was the intent from came out of committee.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Pentney.
Yeah, I mean, while we're talking about this, can I get a clarification maybe? Andy, I'm looking at the PDT memo from May 14th that has the tables, and there's table 5, incidental species currently allowed in small mesh exemption areas, and table 4, current small mesh multi-species exemption area regulations. And for the incidental species allowed for southern New England, there's an inconsistency between those two tables. And I'm curious which one is correct.
So, I'm sorry, I just had to pull up the memo. So, the discrepancy between 4 and 5 is specifically what?
So, if you look on page 10 of the memo, table 4, the bottom row is incidental species allowed. In other southern New England, it lists 5 species, 6 species. And then if you go to the next page, table 6 or table 5, for southern New England, it lists all of them.
Table 5 is more inclusive than table 4.
Okay, so table 4 is incorrect?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you okay, Mr. Bentley?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. I kind of lost my count here. So just a moment. We have the friendly with the two areas explicitly stated in here. Are you okay with that, Ms. Griffin?
Yes.
Mr. Platts? Yes. Okay, thank you. I will come back to Togue.
I'm getting more and more confused with this, and I just have a question that and Eric's question made a lot of sense to me, and I wasn't totally placated by what Andy said, so I just want to make sure that I understand here that there's an incentive to rig the gear properly. As an incentive to rig the gear properly, you're not allowed to retain lobster or monkfish, but there have always been certain exemptions, and now we are just adjusting those exemptions? Okay.
I believe, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that rigging properly, improperly incentive question really was around the raised foot rope gear, okay. Which is not used in all areas.
Okay, that makes sense. Gotcha. Okay, thanks.
That is correct. This does not relate to changing anything where there's very specific exemption areas where the gear requirement is to use raised foot rope trawl, because there's specifications associated with raised foot rope trawl to make sure that it's rigged correctly.
Thank you for that. And thank you to, you know, sometimes we just need to step back and make sure everyone's on the same page. I appreciate that. Mr. Platts.
Yeah, I had some concerns about, you know, what Eric raised, but we're just sending this to consider these things. We're, you know, this isn't being approved. So they're going to go back to committee. We're going to consider it. Then it's going to come back here. So we might be getting a little ahead of ourselves on some of these concerns because they may not actually come out of committee, or they may be addressed in committee. Unless I'm reading consider a modification. So tell me if I'm wrong.
I believe you are correct. I will go to the audience there. Sorry. Gentlemen, you raised your hand a couple times. Could you please come and state your name? And I apologize. We just have to go through the process, actually.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Dan Farnham, Jr. I'm an AP member for this, for Whiting, and have been for well over a decade for this council. Sorry for speaking out of turn before. I was just trying to alleviate some questions that were inconsistent in the presentation, and I just wanted to make that point. Because lobster is not able to be retained in anywhere where we have to use a raised foot rope trawl, so that does not impact how we will rig our raised foot rope trawls. This is more speaking in the southern New England, and then also the Cultivator Shoal areas where you can use other types of gear. Thank you for that. I'd really like to just impart on the council here how important this is to us in the small mesh community, specifically whiting community. I am one of the few people who fish for whiting year round, and we have been on the back burner for a long time. And so you are speaking on maybe what you consider small changes to these exemption areas, but they are very impactful for my business and a lot of other whiting fishermen as well. A couple weeks on extended to these exemption areas on either end can make a big difference to our fishing year. Case in point, I was waiting until June 15th before I could go to Cultivator Shoal this year. My boat is there right now and will continue to be there throughout the season. But prior to that, fishing was very bad in the southern New England area, and so we were scraping by, making pennies a day. So kicking the football down the road for another 2 to 3 years by making an omnibus amendment will be detrimental to myself and the rest of the people in my industry. So I just want everyone to realize that that is part of the impact of what we are speaking on today. That being said, I would still like to move forward with every little thing that we can get to alleviate and utilize what is now an underutilized resource. And that would be increasing the number of species that we have on some of these, and then also the limits that we have on some of the bycatch, quote unquote, bycatch species, but are non-target species for us. As an AP member, if you guys have any questions too, feel free to reach out to me in the audience here. But I think that's all I really have. Was there anything else that I wanted to change? I think that was it. But thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Farnham. I appreciate the comments. Any further questions from comments in the room? Anyone online want to speak to the motion to amend on the board? Seeing none, back to the council. I think we've kind of gone through this. So I would like to do Mr. Platts.
No. Just a brief comment to echo what Mr. Farnham said. I think this council has a problem with small fisheries. They sit on the back burner for a very long time. I could rattle off the names of a number of them. And I think it's something this council needs to address, is that we tend to put so much of our resources into the big fisheries, and there is a certain importance to that, but we neglect small fisheries chronically. I come from small fisheries, and it's something we need to rebalance what we're doing. And I'll just leave it at that for now, but I think it's a habitual problem for this council that precedes the arrival of everybody here. It's not something we're doing. It's something that's historically been done, and we're continuing, and we should probably try and break that tradition. Thank you.
Something quick, Ms. O'Dell?
Yeah, I just really wanted to thank Dan for being here today. We've spent a lot of time, a lot of analysis working on this. I know there's complexity with the groundfish plan that I wish we had known beforehand, but whatever we can do to help the small mesh whiting fishery, in even if it's in small increments. I think it's time that we do it. We've been talking about these areas for a few years now. We've had quite a few meetings where these guys have taken the day off from fishing and come to meetings to review analyses, make recommendations, and I think we need to follow through on that. So I'm going to be supporting this motion, but also supporting 2027 priorities as well, making sure that we don't forget about this fishery. Thanks.
Thank you. To the motion on the board, I will do a show of hands. For those in favor of the motion on the board to amend, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. 17-0-0. The motion will pass as amended. This will now become the main motion. Main motion as amended. I don't think we have to go on. Is there any opposition to the motion as amended, as the main motion? Any abstentions? Seeing none, the main motion as amended will pass with consensus. Back to you, Ms. Griffin. Oh, sorry. Ms. O'Dell, sorry. Anything further from Whiting?
No, that's going to conclude the Small Mesh Whiting Committee report. Thank you for all the dialogue. Last one, almost last one of the meeting. And thanks to staff. We've worked very hard this spring and have a lot more work to do. Thank you.
Ms. Miller, are you ready for ecosystems component? A little more enthusiasm, please.